Could somebody look at, pull up on your computer the first part of 46, 46.1? Okay. Okay. And could, do we have the other microphone? Yes, please. Did somebody find it? 46.1? It should be at the beginning of file 12. You found it? Okay, could you read this? Is there a verse or two quoted there? Okay. I can't hear you. Just turn the volume up or something. Yeah. Go ahead.
Navidyate yasya cha janma karmava. Nanama rupe gunadosha evava tathapi lokapyaya sambhavaya yasvamayaya tanyanukala mruchati.
Oh boy. Okay. No, there's another verse. Look for the word aegisi.
Aegisi.
Yeah, but look for, leave off the first vowel because it might be merged. Just starting with the cerebral D. Dyase. Look for that. See if it comes up in the file.
Aegisi.
Yeah. No, no. It might be E, it might be A. Leave the vowel off and start with the consonant and search for that.
It's J.
Da. Cerebral da.
It does.
And if it's not there, try the next file. Because I can't remember the context. No?
In 12, it's not there. It's not even showing in 13.
Sorry?
It's not even showing in 13.
It's not where? It's not anywhere? Stop. Oh, Krishna.
Dase.
Did you try the next file?
Yeah. In 13 I tried. It's not there in 13.
Oh, boy. Okay. I don't know. Well, let's just read ahead. I can't find it here. No, I have to locate it. Krishna. Should have brought my computer. Okay, anyway, let's just read what we have. 17. The general topic here is that the Lord's body and his activities, his names, his forms are eternal and real. Anyway, starting 46:18. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Okay, I couldn't locate what the verse is that's being explained here, but the word Idyase is there. You are worshipped. Yadva Tyre Ave Aid Yase. Vyakta Mahatmi Kriyase. Or explaining this in another way, only by these names you are glorified, meaning that your greatness is made known. I think the superficial understanding of the statement is that you have no name, but for the purpose of worshiping, we make up names. That's not true. He has names. And so it's reinterpreted to mean that these names are the only way we can worship, we can honor you, glorify you. Not that the names aren't real. Atra yaik shastre ti prasidai Shri Bhagavan eva jatiti pratito bhavati yesham cha sankyet yada vapi tadrisha prabhavaha shruyate tesham svatak siddhatvam anyesham kalpana mayatvam gyeyam. We can understand specifically that only those names are self-manifest which are well known from Scripture, which make one at once think about the personality of Godhead, and which are heard to have this potency even when used indirectly. As, for example, to refer to something else. All other names are concoctions. Okay, so there are the real names of the Lord. It's not that every possible description is actually the name of the Lord. People make up names. They make up descriptions of God. They're not authorized, and they don't have the full potency. The test is, again, first of all, they're found in Scripture. There's precedent for them because they're in the ancient texts, those names. And the effect of these names is as soon as someone hears them, it makes them think about the personality of Godhead. Even if the name is used to refer to something else, still it has the potency. These are the symptoms of a real name of God. All other names are concoctions. Atava he nata yatvanam jatyadinam kalpana navidyante tat kevala vishesha rupam paramam brahma bhavan. Or alternatively, here's another way to explain it. The Supreme Brahman, the pure reality, apart from its qualifications, the terminology is there, vishesha means qualities or qualifications, features. Nirvishesha means something that has no features. But when you have features, then you have features and you have the thing that has the features. It's the visheshya, that which is qualified. And then when you look at the thing with its qualities, it's called vishishta, qualified. If you want to consider abstractly the entity without its qualifications, it's the visheshya, that which gets qualified. So looking at Brahman, Supreme Brahman, the pure reality apart from its qualifications, in which there is no concoction of names, categories, and so on, you are that. So the previous interpretation was that the real names of God are not concoctions. They're eternal. But here it's another interpretation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is also the impersonal Brahman. Even if you conceive of him abstractly without his qualities, that's still him. Even if you don't consider any names or categories, he's still the supreme truth. You are that. You, the personality of Godhead, are that abstract, impersonal Brahman. Yes, Prabhu.
Found that verse, Vididhyase.
You found the verse?
Yeah, Vididhyase. It is there right at the beginning of 13 and 46:15.
Okay, it's hard for me to move around here, jump around here. Can you read it?
It's from Vishnu Purana. It says, Na kalpanam rutertasya sarvasya adhigamo yatah tata krishna chyutananta vishnu nama bhiridhyase.
In the translation of that?
Oh, Master. That in which there are no manufactured names, categories and so on is the supreme truth, eternal and unchanging. It's your own good self, O unborn. But since nothing can be comprehended without some exercise of imagination, you are therefore worshipped by the names Krishna, Achyuta, Ananta and Vishnu.
So the impersonalists, the Mayavadis, will take this to mean that the absolute truth actually is impersonal. And the personality is just a concoction for the sake of having something to worship. Here we're giving two interpretations contrary to that. One is that your names are real. They aren't concoctions. So there is no concoction of name and form in you. And the second interpretation is you are the same impersonal truth. It's just a feature of you. So even ignoring all the names and forms, that's still you, the absolute truth. Okay, continuing. Tat tat kalpanaya avishayatve hetu visheshena karoti lilayata iti vikari tatana bhavatiti iti avikariti. Why Brahman is not an object of such various concoctions is expressed by the words avikari and aja. The first of which means that Brahman is not vikari, or one who acts, plays in different ways. The word is vikari means one acts, you know, kri, in various ways. And Jiva Goswami gave the gloss lilayate, sportfully plays. Well, Brahman doesn't do that. Brahman doesn't have any lilas. The impersonal Brahman doesn't act in various ways. And aja, the second word, means that in this form of Brahman, the Lord is not born. He doesn't become perceivable. So, the personality of Godhead is also not born. All of us living entities, we're not born. But he's being called, the Brahman is being called not born in the sense that he never becomes perceivable. The Brahman is always invisible. Tadrupena najayate na prakriti bhavati. So najayate is glossed as na prakriti bhavati. Is not born means doesn't become manifest. And therefore he's called, as well as being called avikari, he's also called aja. Or the Brahman feature of the Supreme is called avikari and aja. Tata kim avalambya tatra nama jati adi kalpana kriyantam iti bhavaha. So on what basis, the question is implied, can names and categories be imagined for that supreme? Okay, so the question is there. He doesn't have, the absolute truth is, in his impersonal feature, is inactive and unborn or unmanifest. How can you assign names and forms to that absolute truth. Tad kalpanam vina chasarvasyapi artasya vastu matras adigama matram nabavit. Nabavit kimuta tadrisha brahma svarupasya bhavataha. Without these varieties of imagination, no thing at all, no concrete object, can be comprehended. Okay, in general, you cannot understand or think about anything if it doesn't have any variety of name and form. Then what to speak of the comprehension of this essential identity of the Supreme, namely yourself, Lord Vishnu? Unless there's some conception of name and form, then there's no knowledge, there's no realization of the Supreme. Kalpana maya nama jatyadayas tu nakasyapi swarupa dharma bhavanti. Imagined names, categories, and so on are never any entity's inherent properties. Okay? Things have inherent real properties. And the thing could be described in terms of those real qualities. The languages contain, Sanskrit and other languages contain, permanently assigned words that describe certain qualities of things. That's not a matter of concoction. If a hard rock is called hard, that's not a concoction. It's describing a real quality. But when you imagine some names and categories, you make up some qualities and names, they're not describing the inherent, the essential qualities of a thing. I want to think of a good example. I'm thought of a few examples and they don't work. Imagine qualities. Well, okay.
Square triangle.
No, that's an absurd quality. That's an impossible quality. But we're talking about like the man with the red sweater, okay? He happens to be wearing a red sweater today. And maybe he wears this red sweater, the same red sweater every day. But he could lose his sweater. And he'll have to go buy a blue sweater when there's no red sweaters in the market. So that red sweater is not one of his essential qualities. You can call him the red sweater man, but he might show up sometime with a blue sweater. It's a superficial, accidental. Accidental means temporary quality. Okay? Or the hot water. Boiling hot water. But leave it there for 2 hours, it'll be cold. The same water. So the boiling hot quality is not an essential quality. It's not an inherent quality of the water. So to call it red hot water or boiling hot water is something of a concoction. It's not the essence of what this entity is. It's only temporarily so.
And how does this apply to God? Well, coming up to this?
How does it apply to the Supreme?
Yeah.
Well, let's see. Okay. Imagine names and forms are never the essential, describing the essential qualities of a thing. Ba, ba, ba. Yata evam tatak sanket yadina bhavitairapi bhavadvat sarva purusharta pradais tat tad vishesha pratipadakaik krishna na krishna adi namabir eva tvam idyase nitya siddha shruti purana adibi shlagyase natu nirvisheshata pratipadakair nitaram kalpana mayair ityartaha. So, because imaginary names and categories never describe the real essence of a thing, thus, therefore, you are worshipped only by your names like Krishna, which bestow all goals of life just as you do. All the power to give benefits that is in the Supreme Lord are also there in his names. All his potencies are in his names. Even if meant to refer to something else or otherwise used indirectly, and which describe your many special qualities, you're worshipped by those names. Well, okay. Continuing, this indicates that by means of these names only you are worshipped, praised by the eternally manifest Shrutis, Puranas, and other scriptures. Certainly not by means of concocted names describing you as having no qualities. So the real names of the Lord, of the Supreme, are describing him as a person. The descriptions of him as formless, as impersonal, those are the concocted names. There are scriptures that describe you as impersonal, but they're not actually describing your full essence. Especially if it's said that you have no qualities, and it's a fact you have many qualities, that's not actually getting to the essence of what you are. It's actually saying the opposite of what you actually are. So those are concocted names, the impersonal names of the Supreme. Let's see if the commentary clarifies this further. Only transcendental names can be used properly to properly worship the Supreme Lord, and it is those names only which have superworldly potency. Okay, I have one spelling mistake here. Give me a second to fix it. Eternally should have two L's. Okay, got it. Now I continue. Only transcendental names can be used to properly worship the Supreme Lord, and it is those names only which have superworldly potency. Krishna's names at once evoke Krishna consciousness. Even one who before had no interest in Krishna will be helplessly attracted to him by even a little practice of hearing and chanting his names and descriptions of him. Okay, well, that's not just happening to walk by some devotees who are chanting, you know, and not even paying any attention to it or not having any idea what they're mumbling, but to intentionally practice hearing and chanting. That will make you, whether you want to or not, become attracted to Krishna. Even a little practice of hearing and chanting his names and descriptions of him. And perfected practice of chanting evokes Krishna himself, as Narada testified to his disciple Vyas. Pragayatak svaviryani tirta pada priyakshravaha Ahuta iva me shigram darshanam yati chetasi. The Supreme Lord Krishna, whose glories and activities are pleasing to hear, at once appears on the seat of my heart as if called for. as soon as I begin to chant his holy activities. That's Narada speaking to Vyasadeva in the 6th chapter of the 1st canto. So that's the effect, the symptom of a real name of God, that anyone who tries to cultivate hearing and chanting of those names and descriptions will become attracted to the Lord. And if someone chants perfectly, the Lord himself will, directly appears immediately. Continuing, material names never have such power. And even when chanted without intending to refer to him at all, the Supreme Lord's names can award the most sinful person liberation. The fallen Brahmin Ajamil is an example of this. After marrying a degraded woman, he became so selfish and criminal that he completely forgot the God consciousness of his youth. But he happened to name his youngest son Narayan. And when he lay dying, terrified at the monstrous creatures approaching to drag him away. Approaching to drag him away to the court of death, he desperately called the boy's name. He chanted ignorantly, but without any intention of offense against Lord Narayan or his devotees. So, ignorant chanting, but unoffensive chanting. And so, his uttering these 4 syllables just once brought in a moment the effulgent envoys of Narayan, swords in hand, to fend off the servants of Yamaraj. Ajamil was saved from hell by unintentionally chanting the Supreme Lord's name. Krishna is the impersonal Brahman also, but in that form he has no name and form, in his Brahman form. As Brahman, he cannot be known significantly. Even so, it should not be falsely concluded that the names and forms he has in his full appearance as Bhagavan are unreal. Impersonalists concoct descriptions of the Supreme as ultimately formless and nameless. And to say something about Brahman, they have to imagine assignments of names to their idea of it. Well, if impersonalists are going to describe the Absolute Truth, they're going to have to come up with some terms. They're going to have to use words. And as soon as they do, they're in the concoction realm. They're in the domain of imagination. Because the Absolute Truth they're supposed to be describing doesn't have any names and features and qualities. This is, according to Nyaya, what is called apasiddhanta. When you violate, you present an argument that violates the assumptions of your own school of philosophy. Then you can be, this is one of the 33 nigrahasthanams, or grounds, technical grounds for dismissal from a debate. For example, if someone raises an objection and you just can't come up with an answer to it, even though there may be an answer, but you can't think of it, you lose the debate. That's apratibha, inability to respond. Another technical grounds for dismissal is apasiddhanta. If you say something that may be true, but it violates the assumptions of your own school of philosophy, then you're dismissed for apasiddhanta. This is what the term technically means, apasiddhanta. So, for example, if a Buddhist starts presenting an argument about something about the nature of God, you know, God is like this, then he can be, even though what he says may be true or defendable, he's immediately subject to being dismissed from the debate, because Buddhists don't accept that there is a God, an eternal supreme being. They don't even accept that there is an eternal soul. So if they start making any propositions about God, they're dismissible. Their presentation is unacceptable. Similarly, if impersonalists start talking about features of Brahman, then they're also violating their own assumption that Brahman is nirvishesha. As soon as they start saying anything about Brahman, they're violating their own assumptions. So they have to, play tricks and concoct features of Brahman, even though he's not supposed to have any. For example, the Taittiriya Upanishad states, Satyam Gyanam Anantam Brahma. Brahman is real existence and consciousness, unlimited. Shankaracharya and his followers identify this phrase as one of the few cardinal Mahavakyas, formulas of the Vedas that actually describe the formless, or refer directly to the formless supreme. Satyam Gyanam Anantam Brahma. Other parts of the Vedas are inferior, they argue, because they use specific names and qualities to point to the supreme indirectly by indicating its illusory reflections, beginning with the personality of Godhead. In fact, however, Satyam Gyanam Anantam Brahma describes not only formless Brahman, but Bhagawan also, with all his forms, names, and attributes. Okay, the word Brahman is being used, but it's a generic term. It means the absolute truth, but the absolute truth is also the supreme person. And there's where you get the qualities. As soon as you start describing qualities, you're becoming personal. You're describing the Saguna Brahman. And that's okay. There is no Saguna and Nirguna Brahman are not two different things. They're the same absolute truth anyway. Continuing, eternity and consciousness are also specific qualities, which the Supreme possesses. That is, again, eternity and consciousness are also specific qualities which the Supreme possesses, but dead matter does not. Matter is not eternal. It's always being created and destroyed, and matter doesn't have consciousness. Limitlessness belongs only to the Supreme, since the other countless living souls are finite in extent and potency. It is a wild misuse of imagination to claim that certain qualitative descriptions of Brahman in the Vedas refer only to the formless, ignoring Parabrahman, the personality of Godhead. Satyam Gyanam Anantam is not any different than all the other descriptions of Brahman throughout the Upanishads. It's not that now we're, in this one statement we're describing formless Brahman. What's being described is Brahman with qualities. Eternality, consciousness, these are real qualities of the Supreme Absolute Truth, Parabrahman, the personality of Godhead. Okay. Now we continue into the next anuchid. Not the next anuchid, the next paragraph. 46:19. Kintu Krishna dinam chaturnam nam nam upalakshana tvam eva gyeyam Narayanadi nam nam api sankyetadau tatapapava shravanat. We should be aware, however, that the four names Krishna and so on are only a sample reference. I think the verse refers to some names, maybe not that verse or the next verse. You're worshipped by Krishna Adi names, and there are four actual names given. Do you have it there?
In that same verse.
In the same verse. Could you read it again?
Krishna Achyuta Ananta Vishnu.
Okay, Krishna Achyuta Ananta Vishnu. Vishnu? Those four names are mentioned. We should be aware, however, that the four names Krishna and so on are only a sample reference. That's my translation for the word upalakshanam. A sample reference, because there's more to it than that. Since we hear from scripture that other names like Narayan have similar power, it's not only these four names, but there are many other names like this, have similar power when referring to something else and in other unintentional usage. Sankirtan, when you you go to the laundromat, place where they have machines, and sometimes it's called Laundrarama or something like that. And so the name Rama is there in the name of the place where you go to do your laundry. Unintentional chanting of the name Rama, meaning to refer to something else. And there's other unintentional usage. That the names of the Lord... Okay, let me read the Sanskrit for this sentence. Varna eva tu shabda iti bhagavan upavarshaha. This is a quote, I think, from Shabara's commentary on Jaimini's Karma Mimamsa Sutras. Shabara is an ancient commentator on Jaimini. And he quotes something from ancient sage Upavarsha. He says, Varna eva tu shabda iti bhagavan upavarshaha. Ityanena tasya cha nityatvat ityanena cha nyayena varnayataiva nityatvam asya veda sara varnatmaka namnak siddhyati. That the names of the Lord, syllables embodying the essence of the Vedas, the names of the Lord are syllables, but those syllables embody the very essence of the Vedas. They are eternal as those very syllables. Okay, it's not that they have some other form that they exist eternally, and the syllables, the actual sounds of the name, are just some temporary manifestation. No, the actual syllables of the names are eternal. This is proven by the statement, the Venerable Upavarsha says, the syllables themselves are the transcendental sound. That is Jaimini quoting the earlier authority, Upavarsha, as saying that the Vedas are transcendental language. The sound of the Vedas is transcendental. The sound itself, the very syllables, are spiritual. Not that they just represent something unknowable or something indescribable. That the Vedas are giving some description in words, but the real absolute truth ultimately cannot be described in words. That's not the case. The syllables themselves are the transcendental sound, is what the ancient sage Upavarsha said. And by the sutra of the Vedanta, that's the Purvi Mimamsa, Karma Mimamsa, and the Uttara Mimamsa, the Vedanta says, and because it is eternal. Okay, I'll have to explain that in the commentary, what that sutra actually means. The Vedanta sutras are very concise and cryptic. They have to be explained, but rather than mess up the translation by starting to give the explanation, I'll do that in the commentary, what that actually is saying. And because it is eternal. We'll get to the explanation of that. And then Jiva Goswami goes on to refer to another Shruti, the Gopal Tapani Upanishad. Tataiva Gopala Tapani Shrutau Nama Mayashtaka Akshara Prasange Brahmavakyam Tesh Akshareshu Bhavishyat Jagad Rupam Prakashayan Iti. Thus in the Gopal Tapani Shruti, the Gopal Tapani Upanishad, under the topic of the 18-syllable mantra comprising names of the Lord, it's a Vishnu mantra with 18 syllables, Brahma talks about, quote, revealing in those syllables the future form of the universe. That means, where does the universe come from? Janmadyasayataha. The creation of the universe is from the absolute truth. But here we're saying that in those very syllables is the future form of the universe. That means that those syllables are the absolute truth, Brahman. The absolute truth, the world doesn't come just from ordinary words. If these words create the universe, then those words are non-different. Those syllables are non-different than the absolute truth itself. Okay. Atra avara kala jata shabdadi maya jagat karana tvena tadvailakshanyat svatak siddhatvam tata bhagavat sarup abhinatvam cha tadvailakshanyam namnaha. The special nature of the Lord's name as distinct from material names and other creations is this. It is the name of the Lord is the cause of the universe full of words and other objects born in the course of time. Ordinary words get created as part of the universe, but the transcendental words that form the names of God, the transcendental syllables, are the cause of that creation. The name of the Lord is the cause of the universe full of words and other objects born in the course of time. Therefore, it is different from that world, the name of the Lord. And thus, it is self-manifest. The Lord's name is self-manifest and non-different from the personality of Godhead's very self. Now, I'll read the commentary, explanation of this. Although Akrura mentioned, this verse was spoken by Akrura, I suppose in the 10th canto, 40, maybe 46th chapter. Although Akrura mentioned only the four names, Krishna, Achyuta, Ananta, and Vishnu, of course, the Supreme Lord is worshipped by many other names beside these. These names are the essence of the Vedas, all these names. Many demigods are glorified in the Vedas, but their identities and qualities their names indicate are borrowed from the Supreme Lord. Indra means king. Krishna is the original Indra. He's the original Vayu, the original Soma. All the demigods' names are actually originally names of Vishnu. Many demigods are glorified in the Vedas, but the identities and qualities their names indicate are borrowed from those names, those identities and those qualities are borrowed from the Supreme Lord. Indra is the title of the King of Heaven, but Krishna is Akendra, the once original king. Krishna is the original Surya, Vayu, and Agni, the source of light, air, and fire. Ultimately, the names of everyone and everything are actually names of the Supreme Lord. The ancient authority Upavarsha, and then I still have not found out who is Upavarsha. If anybody knows, let me know. And in fact, this quote, I'm not sure. I said it was from Shabara, it might be from the Sri Bhasha. Do you know where it's from? Shankara's Bhasha. Oh. Okay, hold on a second. I'm going to mark that. Okay. This is actually coming from Shankara. Maybe he's quoting it from somewhere else.
It's a refutation of Spotavada in that context, quoting
yes. This sutra. Okay, we won't get into Spotavad right now. Shankara. 1 to what?
1328, something like that. Brahma Sutra
1328. 28. Got it. Okay, excuse me for the disruption here. Anyway, Upavarsha proposed that the eternal form of the Vedas consists of the same words we have received in our human recensions of the Vedas. The human Brahmins who study the Vedas, they receive, they are taught the words of the Vedas. Those are the eternal, that's the eternal form of the Vedas, those very words that they learn. It is not, as the impersonalists think, that the real eternal Vedas are formless, and the audible sound is an illusory expansion. The Vedas in the form of words are eternal, and so the names of the personality of Godhead found in the Vedas are eternal. Okay, now, here is that quote from the Vedanta Sutra that's mentioned. Tasya nityatvat. And because this situation, okay, what's eternal? This is filled in here, the expanded translation. And because this situation of the senses being ruled by the Supreme is eternal, it's an eternal situation that the living entity's senses are ruled by the Supreme. That's eternal. Now, I have a question to myself that's not yet answered. What does that have to do with the syllables of the Lord's names being eternal? Anyway, well, I'll have to look at the Shriya Kabasha on that. Shankara's commentary, 2.4.16. That still needs to be referenced, but I'll continue. In the Gopaltapani Upanishad, Lord Brahma describes how in the interval between the creations at the end of the first half of his life, he meditated for a long time without interruption on Lord Gopal, who appeared to Brahma in person and granted him his Ashta Dasharnam Swarupam, his own self-same form of the 18-syllable Gopal mantra. In other words, Krishna appeared to him and gave him 18-syllable mantra that's non-different from himself. That's described, we get a different, Brahma gets initiated every day of his life. So he keeps on getting reinitiated. This is the particular occasion that's described in the Gopaltapani Upanishad. He received 18-syllable mantra from Gopal himself. And when Brahma developed the desire to begin a new creation, he was able to see within the syllables of the mantra the complete form of the future universe. The mantra containing names of Lord Gopal, revealed by the Lord to Brahma before the current material creation, existed before anything else in this world, because the world wasn't created yet. It had not been destroyed in the previous annihilation, and it held within itself the creation to be in potential form. Okay, we're going to stop there. Okay, if there are any questions, get them to me this evening if you can somehow. Write them down or send them by email and I'll... Yes? Modem doesn't work. My modem's not working. Anyway,
maybe
paper and pencil.
Maybe we can change the system of question and answers. I don't know.
How do you want to change it?
Just that we can ask questions on the spot.
Yeah, but I stopped doing that because it was taking us off on all sorts of tangents.
Well,
we weren't able to stick to the point because we were going, you know, all sorts of questions were coming up and the discussion got completely disorganized.
I mean, it's hard to follow. It's hard just to sit down and follow because it's quite the heavy philosophy. So it's hard just to sit down, follow. Okay, if I have any questions, I'll write it down then. It's too hard today. I don't know how many people actually are following. I mean, today I was a little tired, so that's my fault. But
yeah, but it'll be. my experience in the first attempt was that if we open up for questions, then we lose our direction.
I know certain individuals who go on tangents, but
sorry, I can't hear you.
I know certain individuals.
You're
who
not
go on
close enough to the microphone.
I know certain individuals who go on tangent, but which could just be counteracted. Just they should be pointed out and corrected. And
okay, well, yeah. I'll think about it. I think it would work better if the devotees actually presented the questions. We're not getting many questions. We could see. It makes more sense to start off in the morning with questions and then move on. But if we allow ourselves to be sidetracked in the middle of the discussion for questions. Okay. Can we discuss? We discuss this later. Okay. 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 And for now, thank you all. Glory to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam.